unmistakable sound, even, of Leonard Cohen. Dance Me to the End of Love. Poet, novelist, singer-songwriter, artist, prophet, icon. There's never been a figure like Leonard Cohen. He was a true giant in the contemporary Western culture, entertaining and inspiring people everywhere with his work. Cohen is a cherished artist, and his warmth, humour, intellect and piercing insights are discovered and discussed in Leonard Cohen Untold Stories, which chronicles the full breadth of his extraordinary life. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from Toronto, I believe, author of Leonard Cohen Untold Stories, Michael Postner. Michael, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
The pleasure is all mine. Leonard Cohen, undefinable, basically. I mean, if there was a Renaissance man, if you like, of, say, the late 20th century, mid to late 20th century, and the early part of the 21st, then Leonard would be it.
I think that's a valid and a fair description of him. Very complicated, multidimensional. You know, he contained the multitudes, and he lived a life that had a literary dimension, a musical dimension, a deep spiritual dimension, obviously, and of course a romantic dimension as well.
And he really did sort of embrace that artistic sort of throw everything to the wind, go out on a limb. I mean, the whole, the journeys that took him, especially around Europe, and you think especially around and the Greek islands as well. So what was your particular point of departure with Untold Stories?
My sense was, you know, there had been a number of quite good biographies of Leonard that had come out in the last couple decades. There's three or four of them. All of them have their merits. I had spent most of my life as a journalist, and I kind of had an instinct that there was undiscovered stories about him and things more to be said about his life and the people in his life than those books had reported. And so I thought, why not try a different approach, which was not a top-down, you know, what is the author's point of view or interpretation of Leonard? Let's talk to the people who actually knew him and see what they had to say about him. And so my point of departure is essentially oral biography, which has positives and negatives. I mean, the negative, of course, is that the reader has to decide which version of the truth is more accurate when they're reading all these accounts of Leonard Cohen.
I mean, I suppose also it's the people who knew him. I mean, we talk about him being a Renaissance man and having a breadth of experiences. He's obviously got a breadth of people, from professionals to bohemians and all points in between.
Exactly. You know, you could find, and I did, I would find people who knew him for 10 minutes but had such a meaningful encounter in those 10 minutes, and that was part of the essence of Leonard Cohen, was that he was able to make those 10 minutes with you seem very meaningful. And then there are people who know him for 50 years and have, you know, endless supply of stories about him, and reflecting the many dimensions of his personality. So absolutely, he wandered the world and encountered so many people and left a deep mark on many of these people.
And I mean, how do you find these people? I mean, you didn't put down some shoe leather and go trekking around the Greek islands and all points in between. I mean, presumably did you put out a sort of a clarion call, or did you know people who might know people who would know who would have met Leonard?
Well, I did do some traveling. I did go to the Greek. I did go to Idra. I did go to London. I went to New York. I went to Los Angeles. I went to Montreal. A few other places. So there is some shoe leather involved. The other thing is that I would find people that would say, I knew him somewhat, but really the person you need to talk to is so-and-so. And so that would lead me to so-and-so, and so-and-so in turn would lead me to two others. And the third thing that I think needs to be mentioned is that a book like this, you know, there are two other volumes to come. It was very kind of you to say that this, at the beginning, that this encompasses the full breadth of his life, but it actually only encompasses the first 36 years, because it takes us up to 1970, and there are two more volumes to come. A book of this kind, and I've done now 530, 540 interviews, would not have been possible 20 years ago, because many of the people I would find on the internet, I would find through Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram or some other social media template. And so that has been hugely beneficial to me. You put in a name and suddenly there they are 40 years after meeting Leonard or knowing Leonard in Montreal, and they're living in Thailand. And you can find them, and in 20 seconds, you can establish contact. So that was a remarkable gift to me, and I think will be to other future biographers for other books.
I mean, also, if you're dealing with the early years of Cohen, it's a tumultuous. I mean, you cannot have him. I mean, as John Donne famously wrote, "No man is an island, not even Hydra." And if you cannot separate, if you like, especially somebody like Leonard Cohen, from the time that he was reflecting. I mean, we're talking the '50s, the '60s, that whole boho movement, that whole explosion of the counterculture.
Absolutely. I mean, this was a social revolution. You had a sexual revolution. You had a drug revolution. You had a revolution in the world of music, you know, with the arrival of the Beatles and the Stones, and not to mention Bob Dylan. So, yes, all of this and a political, you know, revolution in the streets, you know, the protests against the Vietnam War. So he very much comes of age in that period. And to some extent, the book, I hope, reflects a little bit about reflects that time, and so absolutely it is to some extent a portrait of the time.
Were you not a little bit worried, because you know they always say you should never interview your heroes because then you might find out they have feet of clay, but if you actually start doing a book on one of your heroes and do research, especially when they are unfortunately not around to do the interview, if you like, face to face, then you might discover things about the figure that sort of shatter your illusions of them? Or did you have no problem with writing about such an icon and getting so many different views of such an icon as Cohen?
I think that's a really good question, but here's my answer, is that I think it's fine to make him a hero for what he produced, his art, his music, his lyrics, his poetry, his novels. But he was a human being, and he was a flawed human being, and I think you know, there is a kind of there are some people who want to sanctify him and would prefer a book that was more hagiographic, a kind of saint making exercise, and that isn't my intention, nor is it my intention to strip any flesh off him. I just think he was human, and he was a flawed human being. He had many different aspects of his personality. He could be brilliant and funny and charming and courteous and gracious, and he was hugely generous with his money to friend and stranger alike. Extraordinary stories have emerged on that score. At the same time, he was quite capable of being jealous and petty and angry and vituperative and competitive with men for women. So I don't have a problem in that sense putting a little tarnish on the hero, because I think the heroism belongs to his art and not to the man, because all of us are flawed, and he was too.
We think, of the songs. You think of Dance Me to the End of Love, which I played. You think of Hallelujah, which is the one that everybody seems to think when you think Leonard Cohen, because it's been covered and it's been on, I don't know, everything from X Factor from there, to whatever. That body of work is impressive enough. And then you have the novels. And with respect to Dylan, who is again a poet's songwriter, but Cohen's novels are significant bodies of work. I mean, you could look at the novels on their own; they stand up on their own as well.
Well, they do. I mean, there is some question about the second novel, Beautiful Losers, because it's largely or in large part about a Catholic Mohawk Indian Aboriginal saint. And I don't know that he could write that book today, because he'd be accused of cultural appropriation for even writing about indigenous matters. But at the time, nobody really batted an eye, and he did kind of glorify the story that was largely unknown. But you're absolutely right. He's got two novels, and I forget the exact number of volumes of poetry, but 10 or 8 or 9 or 10, I think, and they're extraordinary works. So yes, never mind the songwriting. He is an artist even without the songwriting.
And you go up to 1970, which, yes, if you like, is, I mean, I know without sounding, it's about sounding, without trying to sound too, you know, pedantic, it's the end of an era. It's the end of the 60s. It's the end of that idealism, if you like. There's still you know, a little bit of the boho going on in some places. And also, Cohen embarks on his first international tour. So you end this first volume there. Because was that the step where he, if you like, then went on to build even more of a reputation?
Well, yes, precisely. I mean, that seemed to be a logical point to end it. He's had his first successful tour. And he's put himself on the map, particularly in Europe. He's performed in North America as well, but Europe is the place where he is most fully embraced initially, and indeed, Europe remains the place where he would continue to be most fully embraced, even at the end, and even today, you know. I mean, but yes, that was the logical point to end that first book, and then he goes into a very difficult period, both professionally and personally, in terms of his relationships with the mother of his children and with other women. And that'll take us probably into the late 1980s for the second volume.
What was your, if you like, your favorite discovery? Because whenever I interview people about books like this and biographies of figures like who've been influential in any field, they always find something which makes them, you know, there's, if you like, I call it the eureka moment, where you think, you know, that really, if you like, sums up and gives me a key on which to base the rest of this book around. Did you have a eureka moment when writing Untold Stories?
I'm not sure I did. I mean, I think I had many eureka moments when people would recount a story of Leonard doing something extraordinary. You know, he'd be standing in line at a supermarket to buy a package of Doritos, and he'd hear a story. He'd strike up a conversation with a woman whose child had no money to go to university, and he would write a check on the spot. You know, these kind of extraordinary little anecdotes that were revealing of his essential generosity. So there's many of those. I mean, I'm certainly struck by his enormous work ethic, you know, and the hours and hours of painstaking labor that he devoted to crafting these poems and lyrics. He worked hard at that. I'm struck. I must say, I'm struck because, you know, he was a very handsome guy. He had a strong libido. The women threw themselves at him. Most of the time he could not resist. And his ability to juggle multiple relationships simultaneously is a work of art unto itself. you know, it sort of leaves me with my jaw dropping. How was he able to do that? And here's the more interesting thing is that, you know, he would sometimes... These were one-night stands, inevitably, because that was the nature of you know, being a rock star. But many of them turned into substantive relationships of one kind or another, whether for 3 months or 6 months or 3 years, and they would end because Leonard had to move on, and he always had to leave rather than be left, and yet the women would never say anything bad about him, or very seldom. There's one or two that in whose mouth he left a sour taste, but by and large, that's a very small percentage. Overwhelmingly, they will only say, even though they were hurt by him to some extent, they will only say positive things about him. For he was a magical guy. When he was with you, he was totally with you, and he was so charming and so funny and so gracious and so insightful that he could meet you on your own level, you know, whatever that level was. And these were magical moments for these women. And even though he hurt them, they refused to say anything bad about him.
And there's the front cover of the book has got this great image of him sort of leaning nonchalantly, yeah, against, I presume it's something, it looks like maybe a Parisian or London lamppost or something.
And it's London. I think it's London.
Okay, yeah. with a trench coat or a Mac and what looks like it could be a rolled up manuscript. But he's got that Serge Gainsbourg sort of man of letters look. I mean, the whole thing, you can just imagine anybody passing by in cafe cultures just swooning and falling to their feet.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lovely story somewhere, I think it's in the first book, where he's in an Athens cafe with another young writer, another good-looking Jewish writer, and they are sitting at this cafe, and Leonard, this is 1968, and Leonard is not well known at this time. He's just a guy sitting in a cafe, and this guy is struck powerfully by the number of young women who just gravitate to Leonard in this cafe booth. And not to him, incidentally, and he can't quite figure it out. What has this guy got that I don't have? You know, I'm a writer, I'm young, I'm good looking. What is he doing that I'm not? And it speaks, you know, powerfully to that animal magnetism and charisma that Leonard definitely had, that you allude to in the photograph.
What do you hope the people take out of this first volume of Untold Stories?
What would I have them take away?
Absolutely, yeah.
I, if they take away anything, I mean, I would hope it would give some sense of the complexity of the man, the struggles that he went through because of the loss of his father at the age of 9, trying to escape from his somewhat overprotective mother, a family that wanted to coerce him into the family business, which he definitely wanted to reject and get away from, his struggle to emerge as an artist, initially in poetry and in novels, and then realizing that this would be a financial struggle, turning to music. And I think, to a great extent, Dylan would have been the inspiration for that, because he could see that he could do what Bob Dylan was doing and could make a living that way. So I would hope that this first volume gives some sense of his enormous complexity and multidimensionality, and that he's not one thing or another. He shouldn't be reduced to one thing or another. He's everything. So that's the intent of my exercise, and I would hope that that's what people might derive.
And when can we look forward to then? I mean, I've only just got the first volume out at the end of that last year.
Yeah.
When can we look for? I mean, I know it's been the most interesting of times, to put it mildly. But when can we look forward to volume two? And what period does that cover then?
So, in a perfect world, volume two will come out next October or November. No later than November, I'm sure. It'll probably get us up to about 1986, 87, maybe 1988. I'm not sure. It really depends on, I do have a ton of material and I don't want to have to cut too much. So it really, those decisions haven't been absolutely made about where to end it, but approximately the late 1980s. If you enjoyed this one, I think you'll enjoy book two more, because frankly, there are more newer stories in this in the second book and in the third book than in the first one. I mean, you know, the challenge for somebody like me as an oral biographer is, well, you're trying to find new stories that people haven't heard before, but you're also a biographer and you have to include stories that they have heard, because it is, after all, a biography. So many of those stories in the first volume are stories that readers who know his life will be somewhat familiar with to some extent. I think that's less true in volume two and volume three.
Normally you'd be out promoting this, wouldn't you, on a book tour and doing it. I mean, I know you're doing interviews now, but, you know, in the times in which we live, it must be an extraordinary period to be doing this. And I suppose, you know, when it comes to Leonard Cohen's works, I suppose there's no better. You know, people don't really dance around and scream and shout to Leonard Cohen. Well, I suppose they can do, but this kind of suits this one-on-one, this the way that you're going to have to promote this. You know, very cerebral. You know, very sort of thought-provoking way of promoting it, rather than just sort of bashing around the country on a book tour, I suppose.
Well, there's no better forum, of course, than your radio show. But beyond that, you know, technology has enabled us to. I've done 6 or 7, you know, Zoom-like meetings or Zoom-like interview sessions with bookstores and synagogues and book clubs and theater groups, several of them, and several more in the offing. And there have been some television stuff, again, also done by Zoom in Canada, and radio shows in Canada. So you're right. I mean, in an odd way, it is a little more intimate way of doing it. It isn't the conventional, you know, get on an airplane and fly to six cities kind of book junket tour. But there has been a lot of interest by the press, and largely positive, and so it's fine, really.
The book is called Leonard Cohen, Untold Story, The Early Years. That's volume one. It's by Michael Posner. It's out now. Is it by, who's it out with, by the way? Sorry, excuse me. Is it Simon & Schuster?
Simon & Schuster,
yeah,
correct.
Isn't it? If people want to find out more about you or about the book or anything to do with this particular volume, and I look forward to the other two, and hopefully we'll get you back and speak to you in about a year's time about that, where can they find you?
They could find me at Simon & Schuster's website, or they could find the book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or I don't know what bookstore in Spain would have it, but Amazon.
You can download it from our own virtual bookstore as well, so there you go. So they can go straight after this interview and do the book. The book is called Leonard Cohen, Untold Stories, The Early Years, Volume 1. It's by Michael Posner. Michael, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.